Hello, I'm Smita Sanjeev. Welcome to Inside Atkins, the podcast where we track down exceptional people from Inside Atkins, Faithful and Gold, and SNC-Lavalin. It's National Inclusion Week here in the UK, and I'm excited to introduce you to a very special guest, Philip Haw, President of Atkins, who is also the executive sponsor for Equality, Diversity, and Inclusion for the United Kingdom and Europe. A proud civil engineer, Philip has held several positions. He previously led the transportation division and operations across Europe. Today, he's responsible for Atkins' infrastructure, engineering and design services worldwide and is a member of the executive committee of SNC-Lavalin. Philip is also passionate about the EU skills agenda, equality, diversity and inclusion, and a strong advocate of STEM and early career development. He is an executive committee sponsor for our region and has also sponsored our Women's Professional Network and LGBT plus networks. Philip joined Atkins way back in 1997 when we were just starting into our ED&I journey. 23 years later, he's helping staff and leadership co-create a bold new ED&I strategy. The vision is to make a lasting difference to our organization and inspire others in the industry. Today, I'm going to find out what that means for all of us here at Atkins. Philip, welcome, and thank you for making time to talk to us.
Hello, Smita. It really is a great opportunity to be here and to have the time to talk about a subject that you rightly say I'm incredibly passionate about and believe we need to do more to make more of a difference in our company.
Thanks, Philip. I've been on board with Atkins for just about 3 years, so it's hard to imagine Atkins any different. From an equality, diversity and inclusion or ED&I perspective, what's changed at Atkins in the last 10 years?
I think there's been lots of changes, actually. And, I think probably the biggest one that I would say, and it applies to Atkins as well as to our parent company, SNC-Lavalin, is that we've just got more general awareness about issues around ED&I. You know, so even if we haven't directly changed things in the company, and I think, we have made lots of changes too, it's really just that increased awareness. And I think fundamentally about respecting, understanding and appreciating and valuing different people's views and ideas. I think that generally people are just so much more conscious of the whole ED&I agenda than perhaps they were before. And there's, I think, an increasing awareness of the benefits that we have from getting the most diverse and inclusive teams that we possibly can. I think we've probably all seen some of the research and data that suggests that the more diverse the team, the better it performs. And I think, I've seen lots of examples of that across the company over the last few years. Now, as an organization, I think we've taken a number of really specific actions as well. And I think, one of the things that I'm proudest about actually is the networks that we've created across the company, all about, creating space for people to get together and to talk about the things that are challenging them or the things they think that we need to improve on. And so, for example, our UK business is recognised now as being a disability confident, committed employer. And we've also enabled staff to form interest groups, which include the Armed Forces, Women's Professional Network, parenting groups and things like Mumsnet, our disability group and our LGBT plus networks. So for me, this is all about encouraging and supporting all of our people as they move through their career with the company. And again, encouraging these communities to talk about their experiences and about how they think things can improve. And for me, this is just such an important thing because, I believe that we all have a fantastic contribution to make to our business. And but actually, if we don't allow people or don't create the right spaces for them to share those views and to have a real voice, then absolutely we're failing people in the company. So I think the networks have been a massively positive step forward in terms of how we engage. One particular network that I've been involved in has been around the LGBT plus network. And, I think the way that group formed and what we've learned from that has been hugely important. And, the leadership of that group under Stephen Berry, I think, has been absolutely fantastic. But we've also done a lot around targeting gender and BAME diversity, particularly in our early careers intake and, of course, across the whole of the organisation. So, I think we've made some really important moves there and looked at, obviously how we're significantly increasing the number of people from diverse backgrounds that are joining our business early careers. And probably the last thing I'd say in response to this piece is really that, we've changed the way that we recruit people and the way that we advertise roles. We've realised that job descriptions have traditionally been biased towards white males, so we're changing our language that we use to be more inclusive. We've also retrained all of our recruiters to look at returners and service leavers, and to do that with much more of an open mind than perhaps we've done before. And really, you know, we're looking at the potential that these people can bring into our organisation, and which of their, probably rather actually than the boxes they might tick. So, you know, if you visit our website, you'll see it has Recite Me accessibility tools that will remove online barriers to help, you know, people search for better career opportunities. And lastly, you know, our executive committee is taking a really strong leadership responsibility to drive change for equality, diversity and inclusion. You know, my colleagues at XCOM level are all sponsoring different groups and all really active in terms of how we take things forward. And in particular, of course, I sponsor our group here in the UK and Europe.
It makes me really proud to think that Atkins has been pressing on for change for so long. And this National Inclusion Week, the theme is Each One, Reach One. So what is your best tip for making the industry a better place?
I think that the Each One, Reach One is really a fabulous tagline because, you know, we've all got an individual responsibility to play to make a difference. You know, whatever our role is in the organisation, then I think, you know, we almost have that duty to make sure that we're supporting each other and helping everybody progress in the company. I think probably the biggest thing that I've seen and benefited from actually is the role that mentoring plays. And I think that's incredibly important in terms of, you know, how we make progress in the business. You know, so putting yourself out there as a role model, agreeing to give up some time to mentor one or more individuals, supporting them through their challenges and creating opportunities or helping them create opportunities for themselves. You know, it's such a fabulous thing to be involved in. But, you know, it's all about that point about understanding and creating time to listen and understand others. So, you know, the fact that people are prepared to make time for somebody else and recognize that we can all support those around us, I think it's a, you know, a really important thing for us to follow through with as a company.
That's already got me thinking about how I can make a difference. And how are you, maybe as an individual, championing inclusion?
You know, I think as a leader, people observe your actions and behaviors. You know, you're always on watch. And I think, you know, that the way that, you know, I behave and the way that, you know, my leadership team and other senior people in the organization react sets the real tone for the organization. And I think I'm probably a person that people would recognize as wearing my heart on my sleeve. And, you know, I'm very open about what I think about various different topics. And I'm really passionate about inclusion. You know, absolutely everybody in our business has the right to come to work, to be valued for what they do, and to feel part of a team, a community, a network, but also to really have their voice heard. So at the smallest of meetings or the biggest of events, I try to ensure that we create an environment that's comfortable for everybody just to be themselves. And you can make a real difference, I think, you know, by getting involved. It's not about necessarily being a leader or leading everything. It's about being bold and supporting where it's appropriate to support. So now, as I said, I've sponsored our LGBT plus network in the UK, which is a hugely valuable insight for me in terms of, you know, how people, you know, deal with different situations in the workplace. And, you know, I was amazed at some of the stories that I heard. I was also appalled at some of the things that I heard in terms of, you know, how people felt or how other people reacted towards them. And, you know, there is just no place for that in our organization. So, so one particular example that stuck out for me was, talking to a younger member of our team that was going through a gender change reassignment and, just thinking about, you know, how they were dealing with, you know, their emotions, their, you know, the challenges and thoughts of things like that at home and in the workplace. And the bravery of that individual actually to speak openly about the way that they were feeling was something that really touched me. So, again, just that, you know, it's just really, you know, great to create that sort of environment. And I also really felt, you know, at a particular event, you know, a female employee who basically hadn't felt previously able to talk about who she was. And that question, at the weekend, how are you? How was your weekend? How was your weekend with your husband? And that type of thing. And actually, she just hadn't felt comfortable to say that her partner was another woman. And I just hope that, you know, the work that we're doing, those networks in particular that give people the strength and confidence to be themselves, are really having an impact. And that's why, you know, I think the changes that we're trying to make in the company are just so important for us as a business. So, you know, when it comes to my own team, I'm driving and trying to get as much diversity into the senior level as I can. I know that's an area that we still need to massively improve on. But I also know that, you know, I've got a responsibility to set a benchmark for, you know, how our company should be. You know, and whilst I absolutely always believe that it's the best person for the job, I've got a very open mind in terms of, you know, bringing that right balance to our team. So, you know, hopefully if you look across the EDPM team and actually if you're checking out our internet at the moment, you'll see with profiling all of the EDPM leadership team over the course of a number of weeks. And that's all about, you know, making a difference in terms of the representation of the business at a senior level. So, you know, I think we've made a major step forward in terms of the backgrounds of people, ethnicity and gender and locations, actually. And I feel that the team will be much stronger as a consequence and will help further set the right tone for the business.
So that gets me thinking. So you have a diverse team. So what? It's a question that kind of pops up a lot. So can you maybe share a recent example of how having someone from a diverse background actually helped shape a team's decision for the better?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, I think, well, I see this almost every day, actually, you know. So, you know, when I'm working with my team, basically getting different points of view on any topic is particularly important. And it's actually been really key over the course of the last few months when, you know, dealing with both the COVID-19 situation and the impacts that has on different communities globally. I think, you know, having that diverse thought in my team has really helped us, you know, manage through that situation, I think, in a very positive way. I'm actually super proud, actually, of how we as a company have managed through this situation, always with the health, well-being and care of our staff at the forefront of what we're going to do. But I think it becomes particularly important when we're looking at our strategy for the future. And during 2020, we've been looking at our new five-year plan, you know, about how we're going to respond to you know, what the future of work will be like. And just having you know, different people from different backgrounds, from different parts of the world, actually engaged in that discussion, I think has led to the production of a plan for the future, which I think is so much stronger and so much more all encompassing than I think we would have otherwise have produced. So, you know, it's just great to have such a strong team with such diverse views. Sometimes makes it harder to come to a decision point, you know, because you've ultimately got to make some decisions about things. But it's been great to have that, and I'm sure that we will benefit from having such a diverse leadership team over the coming months and years.
It's really great to hear about the positive impact of diversity in action. So why do you think organizations fail at getting inclusion right?
Frankly, I think it's because it's quite hard to do, you know, and I guess, you know, why do I say that? And I think, you know, because, you know, we're in part changing mindsets, in part because, you know, we've got people who, you know, we're asking them to, you know, perhaps listen in a way they haven't, or to think about things in a way that they haven't before. And I guess, you know, there's, you know, really that sort of sums up as those unconscious biases that exist in people's minds. And, you know, working to change that requires being really focused on behaviours and really thinking about what we say, and in particular, you know, not walking by, you know, so when we hear things, you know, that don't feel quite right, then we should feel free to challenge those. But I think there's a really big thing here about listening and being more empathetic to things. So, you know, there's obviously been, you know, I guess in recent times, Black Lives Matter and some of the scenes and incidents that we've seen, particularly in the US, I think have obviously shocked, you know, many people around the world. But, you know, really trying to understand what that means, you know, is difficult for me, you know, as a white male, nearly 50, you know, thinking about, you know, some of those topics and thinking about how does that impact people. you know, at times I've just not felt, you know, what those people have felt or understood, you know, what it's felt like to be a minority in a particular situation. And so, you know, I know I need to educate myself. And I think, you know, one of the best ways of doing that is just to listen. And again, I think, you know, the BAME network in the UK have done a fabulous job of basically helping share experiences and talk about what it's like to be in a particular community at a particular time. And so that's been completely invaluable. But, you know, I think a couple of other things I would add to that is that, you know, we are on a journey and things like improving our unconscious bias understanding, doing, you know, particular set pieces like we've done with the BAME community, challenging poor behaviour. These are all really, really important. But it is also, you know, about investing in training and development. It is about helping people recognize their own biases and therefore, you know, understanding how better they might deal with them. And so, you know, for me, that's, you know, that's super important. But I think, you know, one of the things that we struggle with, you know, regardless of, you know, gender or BAME diversity or whatever, is that sometimes we can be quite hierarchical in organizations and therefore people also feel less comfortable to speak out. And you know, I think it's really, really important that people feel able to speak up in our business. And I can certainly say that, you know, I value that so much and really value the thought that somebody feels able to speak about something. You know, and we dealt with her, or I dealt with a particular incident in the business fairly recently where, you know, a member of staff felt really uncomfortable about the way that her country of birth was being discussed. And you know, to the point where she felt she had to leave the conversation. And actually somebody else who was in that discussion recognized that as being absolutely not the right environment that we should be in, particularly, you know, as that person was showing signs of distress. And they felt able to speak up. They raised that issue. And as a consequence, you know, we were able to deal with that more appropriately as a company. And, you know, again, it's all part of that, you know, educational example. So, you know, I think if you don't feel that you're in a culture where you can speak up, then we've got a real problem from an inclusion perspective. But I think that's something we're working really hard to try and improve.
And as you said, it's hard and all organizations struggle to get it right. So what have you found the most challenging at Atkins?
You know, it's always difficult, that kind of question, because, you know, I'm so proud of the brilliant work that we've done across the organization, recognizing that, you know, we're on a journey. But I do wonder whether we push ourselves hard enough and, you know, perhaps some of the unconscious bias we've been talking about actually holds us back from being bolder in terms of some of the things that we could do. So, you know, my challenge has been actually about whether or not to set targets. And, you know, that's an incredibly emotive subject. And, you know, there are definitely mixed camps out there as to, you know, why people think targets are a good thing or not. But certainly, you know, I read, in fact, actually a female member of our team actually dropped a book onto my desk one day that said why women need quotas. And you know, it was a really interesting read because it was just talking about, you know, actually, if you don't measure some of these things in the right way and don't look really hard, particularly the inputs that you're making to drive change, then actually you won't get a different response in terms of the outputs. So, you know, so it's a really interesting topic. Personally, I think, you know, we need to move on to the next step and therefore setting some goals for ourselves is important. And I worry that, you know, we won't make the progress that we could make unless we're slightly firmer in terms of setting some of those goals. So definitely an emotive subject and it's a constant question. But I guess what I would say is that I would love to hear from people in our business, you know. So, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you've got a view on how we move things forward, whether you think targets are a good idea or not, whether they're meaningful or damaging, you know, I would love to hear from you. So, yeah, drop a comment on this and let's get some views from around the business.
Thank you, Philip. As you just said, we'd love to hear from you. So please reach out via any of our social media channels and tell us what you think. And Philip, on an organizational level, how are you hoping Atkins will be able to encourage and lead when it comes to ED&I?
Okay, so I think, you know, the first thing here is about being visible in terms of what we're doing and why we're doing it and actually celebrating success. You know, so, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, in fact, I know actually we're not always great at a bit as a business about talking about the things that we're doing well and that are being successful for us, you know. So, and I think it's really important that visibility is key, and you know, that people know there's somewhere they can go where they can talk to somebody else and get involved if that's what they want to do. So I think encouraging people from our organization to get involved in our groups internally, but also externally, and thinking about, you know, what profile that gives for them and what that, you know, profile that gives for us as an organization to basically carry on pushing our ED&I journey. You know, so I think we've done pretty well in creating the organizational frameworks to make that possible. And but, you know, I just encourage people to continue to get involved. And that's certainly something I've tried to do with, you know, all of our leadership communities. So, you know, our leaders in the UK and Europe all take roles sponsoring ED&I with different levels of responsibility and action. But, you know, in particular, you know, getting involved in the various different networks that we've established and speaking out on some of the more important topics. We're also making sure that we invest into our people plan and our ED&I plan overall. And so, for example, we've just hired Sandra Sylvester as an ED&I specialist into our team. And that's really about, you know, supporting those people that are already super active in that space, but actually, you know, bringing some specialist insight and awareness into that so that hopefully, you know, we can move our journey on faster. I think it's also important that we learn from other organizations outside of our own. We absolutely know that we know we don't know anything. We don't know everything. And that, you know, that learning from others is such an important way to fast track some of the things that, you know, we could do. So, you know, what are other organizations doing? What might their advice be to us? So, you know, making sure that we're involved in the right places with the right groups, building up those networks, you know, can really help us move forward and accelerate our journey. And in fact, actually getting involved in that way really underpins the whole spirit of inclusivity and collaboration that we're trying to foster as a business.
Yeah, absolutely. And while everything you've said is very encouraging, some people believe we don't have an ED&I problem or need any more inclusion. What would you say to them?
I guess, you know, everyone's entitled to their own view. And obviously, I fully respect that. But it's not a position that I agree with. I mean, if you look across our organization and just listen to people's stories about when they haven't felt included or engaged, then you'll realize that there is so much more that we can do. You know, you'll find that there are lots of people in our organization, actually. And this is, I think, covers everybody, you know. So this isn't about thinking about specific groups here. This is the general population. You know, we've probably all been in an environment actually where we felt uncomfortable about, you know, perhaps it was the way we were spoken to, perhaps it's the way that our ideas were treated when we shared them. You know, perhaps it was just that actually we felt that we were in an environment where we couldn't speak up and say our minds. So, you know, for me, inclusion is all about our whole organization. And until we're at a point where we've eradicated those stories, you know, it means we probably haven't created the most inclusive environment that we can and can achieve. And but I think, you know, this probably also plays out in our statistics. If you look at the number of women and BAME employees in our organization, you know, it's not just representative of the broader population. I know that we often compare ourselves in the engineering sector. And I know that, you know, the number of females, for example, and BAME population studying engineering at college or at university isn't at the levels where we would like it to be. But I just believe that we should be doing more and we can continue. So when people say to me, oh, I think we've done enough or we've done more, I just don't think we have and there's more that we can do. But, you know, again, I just want to make it very clear that we have amazing people doing amazing things around our organization. But there is just more that we can do and we need to continue on this journey. But this isn't just about our business, you know. So, you know, I recognise as well that there's a broader industry challenge here. And you know, again, as I said, you know, encouraging people to get involved in external networks and groups is important in terms of driving that change in our industry as well.
Yes, who wouldn't want a future that is better and more promising for everyone? And what are some of the measurable ways that we've been championing equality, diversity, and inclusion?
Well, you know, I think going back to the sort of statistics and data, you know, we've had some, you know, really positive step forwards, I think. And so, you know, in our last Vox survey, you know, so the employee survey that we do across the company, our employees responded positively to the statement that SNC-Lavalin truly believes the diversity and inclusion of its employees. And 71% of our people agreed that that was the case. You know, so we're working really hard at providing more opportunities for candidates. You know, I've been overwhelmed by, you know, our early careers program and the intakes that we have. And yes, you know, I know we impacted to a degree this year because of COVID-19. But actually, when you look at the statistics, you know, that we're getting close to 50% of female intake, for example, which is, you know, far and away above, you know, what we've achieved in the past. And that's a great job, you know, by our teams across the business. It's been our best ever year for onboarding female talent, you know, so our overall female intake this year is at 38% against only 18% of women leaving engineering colleges, you know, so, you know, a really important step forward. And, you know, going back to that challenge that we have that that actually, you know, the number of women taking engineering at university level is needs to be improved as well. But also, you know, within our infrastructure division in the UK, I'm really proud that 34% of the early careers intake has been from the BAME community. And that really is a positive step forward for our business. So, you know, I'm really proud of our team's great achievements. And these figures show that we're actively championing female and BAME employees and starting to make steps in the right direction. But we now need to focus on how we support this early careers cohort to accelerate their careers. And really move through the company as quickly as they can and reaching their potential within the organization. So, you know, but of course, you know, I'm talking about early careers intake there, but actually this applies to all of our employees across the company and giving them the best opportunity to take their career where they want to take it within the company.
And we're really pleased to be partnering with Clear Company to co-create the next strategy. So why do you think this co-creating is so important?
Well, you know, this is, you know, a really important topic, isn't it? Because, you know, we talk about, you know, actually one of our values as a company around collaboration. And for me, collaboration and therefore co-creation, you know, working with others is an essential part of being inclusive. You know, if you can't take on ideas from others and learn from that and weave that into your own thinking, then actually, you know, we're probably not in the right place, you know. So working with Clear Company is going to bring some new thinking, ideas from other industries and from other companies that will overall improve the quality of our own strategy. So, you know, I'm really excited about that for the business. You know, I want our new plan to be bold and ambitious. It can only be that way, I think, if we listen to our employees and leaders and truly understand the lived experiences they have. You know, what is it really like to be part of this organization and can, you know, how do we improve it? You know, so whether you're an employee or a people manager, you know, what's your true experience day to day of being in this business? Are we inclusive? You know, are we really, you know, making the changes that I hope that we're making in the business? And if not, you know, why not? You know, how does it feel to work in this region to be part of this organization? You know, and, you know, for me, you know, the value of working to co-create, you know, looking beyond the policies and processes you might have in place and really focusing in on, you know, people's real life experiences will be such an important part of, you know, how we continue the journey that we're on.
And this October, you have Atkins's internal ED&I event in your diary. Can you give us a sneak peek of what we have planned?
Yeah, so I think the plans for this are coming together really well, Smitha. And, you know, my team has a great lineup of activities for October. You know, really, it's, you know, touches on much of what we've talked about in this discussion, which is, you know, the idea is to share as much knowledge and perspectives around ED&I across the business and to hopefully, you know, bring people a little bit closer together. You know, so in our recent UK workplace survey, employees said that, you know, one of the things they missed most about being in the office was those off chance social interactions. And I have to say that's something I've certainly missed as well. So, you know, we've done lots of things across the business to try and overcome that and replace that. But one of them, which I think is a great idea, is called chat roulette. You know, so basically it gives everyone in all of our offices, you know, around the world, actually a chance for a random catch up at a time that suits them. And, you know, it sounds pretty exciting. I think that'll be quite an interesting experiment to see how that works. But we'll also be running, you know, a workshop for our line managers called Be Inclusive, which covers, you know, some areas of good and bad practice when hosting virtual meetings and opportunities for, you know, questions and discussion around that. You know, so as much as I would like as many of our people as possible to return to the workplace, you know, we recognize that, you know, we're going to be in this virtual environment, certainly for, you know, certainly for quite a long time, I think, but also it's going to become part and parcel of our daily working lives, you know. So it's important that, you know, we're thinking about how we behave online as much as we do when we're in sort of face-to-face social interactions. But going back to, you know, what we're going to be doing in the week, well, you know, the staff networks are also putting together some really useful webinars. So far, we've confirmed two. The first one's a spotlight on hidden conditions and neurodiversity, hosted by the Enable and Neurodiversity Network, and then one by ParentsNet called Hello Career. So, you know, again, you know, I think we'll build that program out ahead of the week. Other events include things like unconscious bias training for all of our managers, an employee network to XCOM panel discussions. We'll be nominating and training some new ED&I ambassadors ahead of that, and we'll be sharing some of your experiences and videos about, you know, what everyday inclusion means to you. And then finally, you know, we're going to be updating our global EDI page and our Bank of Integrity moments to reflect, you know, some of the things that we're doing.
Oh, that sounds awesome. And for those listening, we'll be sharing those stories as they happen across our social media channels. Philip, I have a few more questions, but this time they're straight from our employees at Atkins. This one is from a new employee who works in our Aerospace, Defense, Security and Technology Division. And their question is, hi, Philip, I feel our industry lacks diversity in technical roles in cyber. It's all about thinking outside the box, so it's essential to have diversity to prevent groupthink. So my questions are, what can we do as an industry to improve diversity in technical roles within cyber, and how can we promote more role models?
Well, it's great to have some questions from the team, and what a question to start with, because it's a, you know, a huge topic. And I think, you know, much of what we've talked about today actually is, you know, is trying to address some of the I guess some of the concerns and issues highlighted by that question. But you know, I guess, you know, my view would be that, you know, we have a moral obligation across every technical discipline that we have in the business to encourage diversity, you know, from the very early points of, you know, education, the education system, all the way through to, you know, how we encourage people into our organization, and then how we train and develop people as part of their career with us. You know, I'm proud of a lot of the things that we do, but, you know, one thing in particular, you know, is the 600 or so STEM ambassadors that work at every level of education, from local primary and secondary schools all the way through into universities, you know, talking about, you know, what a great career people can have in some of our technical disciplines, from, you know, literally from engineering through to things like cybersecurity. And it's something I feel particularly passionate about. You know, I spend quite a bit of time in local schools and, you know, particularly the ones that my children are at, talking about this topic. And I always remember, actually, a bit of an aside here, but, you know, in year two, when I went into my daughter's class and I was asking questions about, you know, some engineering topics, you know, every child in the class put their hand up. But by the time I went in year five, I was doing a presentation on the London Olympics, I think. And, you know, by year five, the only girl that put their hand up was actually my daughter. And it's often made me reflect about, you know, what happens between the age of, you know, 6 or 7 and 10 or 11 in terms of that thinking. And, you know, it's only a snapshot, but actually just goes to show the sort of level of work that that we still need to do. So, you know, I guess, you know, going back to the question and just thinking about, you know, our way of recruiting. And I think, you know, we need to be happier to accept people from a wider educational background. So, you know, a recent graduate development program dinner that I attended, you know, I'd say the gender split was excellent, actually, you know, 50-50, perhaps from a male-female perspective. And I was that obviously was very much appreciated. But it was interesting, actually, that most of those people came from the same sort of social background and the same sort of educational background. And so actually, that even though there was a great male-female split, I just wonder whether, we are really spreading the net wide enough to bring in different skills and different thinking across the business. And you know, that's something that I know that we'll look at harder. And then finally, the point of role models. You know, I think I've touched on this topic already, but you know, role models are just so essential in our business. And if you think about this particular question in terms of cyber, you know, actually, what opportunities are there for people to retrain and learn new skills? And actually, how accessible is that for people in our organization? So, you know, creating a great role model of someone who's moved from one part of the business to another, from one technical domain to another, would be fantastic. And I'm sure it would give many others the confidence to do differently. So I guess, you know, think broadly about the types of skills we're employing. Can they be more diverse? And actually just really think about what impact role models can have on moving things forward.
That's a really exciting vision for our recruitment and HR teams. Here's the next question from one of our new apprentices. How does the leadership team break down cultural barriers when they don't know anyone different from them?
So I think in terms of this, I mean, I think probably again is something that I talked on earlier, but you know, I think it's about listening and understanding and basically getting ourselves into a position where as many of our leaders as possible have a greater understanding of what it feels like to be different in our business or to be from a different social group or whatever that, you know, the situation might be. And so, you know, one of the things we're encouraging all of our senior leaders to do is to be more educated actually around that sort of challenge, but to do so by getting involved in the brilliant networks that we have and really trying to understand actually, to put themselves in the shoes of somebody else in the business and what it feels like to be in that space. So, you know, that empathy and that understanding, I think, is, you know, absolutely key.
Yeah, that's a really great piece of advice. And here's our last employee question. What is the communication and coordination plan for sharing ED&I practices across UK and Europe, ensuring we don't reinvent the wheel every time in every office?
Yeah, so, you know, this is, you know, particularly important and because, you know, we want to, you know, continue to progress as a business. And therefore, you know, going back to that whole point about sharing what we're doing and learning from that, I think is really important. So, not only do we have dedicated portals, you know, on our intranet site, for example, you know, so always be curious and check things like that in the first place, you know, understand the networks that we have in place and, you know, how those networks are going to help continue to promote and drive change in the business. So I guess, you know, my main answer to that is, you know, just be curious about what's already out there before inventing something new. And in the spirit of true inclusiveness, be curious about what others are doing before jumping into something new yourself. And I think that way we'll take the most advantage from what we already have out there.
That's really good to know. Thank you. And finally, in these uncertain times, please, can you provide some encouragement to any listeners out there who fear facing career barriers just because of who they are?
Yeah, so... The final thing that I would say is that, you know, I believe that the leadership team of this company believes that being the most inclusive organization we can be is great for business, but it's also because it's absolutely the right thing to do. And you know, I would say to anyone, you know, please feel free to speak up, you know, find the right channel that allows you to do that, connect to the right group that enables you to feel comfortable to be who you are. And ultimately, you know, we do not want to be in a position where people feel uncomfortable in our business, you know. And you know, as I said right at the outset, everyone is different. We value that difference. We value that uniqueness. And we want you to feel at home in this company. So, you know, if you don't, and there are things that we could be doing better, then please speak up and share your story, because you know, that's the way that we'll learn and that's the way that we'll improve.
You've been Inside Atkins with me, Smita Sanjeev. My guest today has been Philip Hoare, President of Atkins. This episode sums up what I love most about Atkins, how accessible our leaders are. So from one of the most junior members of the London office to Atkins's most senior one, Philip, I've enjoyed having you on the show.
Thank you very much. It's been great to hear. Great to be able to talk on this topic as well. So thank you.
Thank you. To hear new episodes as soon as they go live, just subscribe to Inside Atkins on Spotify. See you next time.